Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Podcast on Radio MD, iHeart, or wherever you download us from. Thank you very much for doing that. As I always say, 50,000 of you, we can't all be wrong. Thanks very much. We have a great guest. This is 1053B, 1053B of the podcast. The B's are always the guest segments, and we have a wonderful and really appropriate guest for you today. Karen Hudson is an associate professor at George Washington University. She practices both sports medicine and emergency medicine with MedStar Health at Georgetown in Washington, D.C. She received her undergraduate and medical degrees from the University of Virginia, remained at UVA for a residency training in emergency medicine, and then did a fellowship in primary sports care medicine or primary care sports medicine at Georgetown and MedStar Washington Hospital Center in downtown, I like to say downtown Washington. So you get to see a lot, I assume in the summer, a lot of hot weather, and especially since you're the team physician of the Washington Capitals and Washington Wizards, or one of the team physicians, although the Capitals probably don't have to play in warm weather, the Wizards probably do. So what do you tell the team?
So when we're thinking about heat illness and heat stroke, certainly our outdoor sports are at highest risk. So we think about things like soccer, we think about football, we think about people training outside. And when we say Washington is a swamp, we're not just talking about politics. Our city was actually built on top of a swamp. And days like today, it is 100 degrees with a heat index today. It's hot out there. We've got to be careful when our athletes, both the well-trained and the amateurs, are outside trying to exercise.
Now, so when you talk to the soccer players, what do you talk to them about? In other words, do you say, don't practice between X and Y, or only do it early in the morning before the heat and humidity kick up, or make sure you drink three glasses of water every 20 minutes, or what do you tell them?
All of that. So it really depends on the level of the athlete and where they're coming from. Acclimatization is a huge part of our risk factors for heat illness. So people who come from the warmer, hotter weather in the South are more used to it, and they may think there's no problem going outside and training in the middle of the day, whereas people who come to D.C. from Maine or from northern climates may get to a day like today and they may absolutely besides themselves with heat. So number one is how used to the heat is your body. And then number two is just that avoiding the heat of the day. So if there's no reason to be outside between 10 and 2 or 10 and 4 or the hottest hours of the day, just don't do it. Schedule that training for early in the morning or later in the evening. When we're outside, we want to be wearing loose-fitting, light-colored clothing. We want to make sure we're in those moisture wicking technical fabrics that help sweat evaporate from our bodies. And we cannot at all overestimate the importance of good hydration. And that's not just before exercise, but it's the day before, the morning before, during exercise, and afterwards.
Now, heat can come throughout the year, but you say you're on a swamp. Is the humidity a benefit in that you get water? Or is it a detriment in that it causes you to sweat and lose electrolytes?
So definitely a detriment. So there are a couple things we think of when we worry about the risk of heat illness. And a lot of people are familiar with the idea of heat index. So temperature plus humidity gives you a warmer, feels-like temperature outside. When we're thinking about this for athletes, though, we add in two additional factors, and those is the radiant heat. So is the sun shining? We all know that on that 100-degree day, it still feels cooler in the shade than it does in the bright sunshine. So that radiant heat will, again, increase that feels-like temperature. And especially in urban areas where we think of them as sinks, where the concrete absorbs that heat, or when we have our athletes out on artificial turf surfaces, which also absorb the heat, that feels-like temperature can go up even higher. So radiant heat, humidity, which actually limits the amount of sweat which can evaporate from our skin. And then the last of those is wind speed. So on a breezy day, that breeze is going to help that sweat evaporate from our skin more quickly, and that's going to help cool us down. So still day, no wind, lots of sunshine, lots of humidity, high heat. It's just a recipe for disaster during those peak hours of the day.
And if someone is used to running outside, do you say find an indoor track? Or on hot days, does an indoor track, even if it's air conditioned, still have the same problem because you're going to go out afterwards?
So certainly when it's really hot, training indoors may be safer, especially if that indoor is climate-controlled, drier air, air conditioning. But we know that when we're in areas where the heat does not drop or the temperature does not drop below 80 degrees consistently at nighttime, our bodies can take on added heat stress. So in places which are hot or in the middle of a heat wave, that cumulative heat stress can actually build up. And then even training inside may be less safe, but it would certainly be better than training outside on those hot days. So if someone's going to run and 100 degrees outside, I think running inside would certainly be a good choice.
So we're talking with Karen Hudson, an MD who is an associate professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine at the Georgetown School of Medicine. She's a member of the MedStar Sports Medicine team and a team physician, or one of the team physicians for the Washington Wizards and the Washington Capitals. Now, when you see a long running, in other words, I got to watch, I think it was the, and I'm trying to remember whether it was the England versus Germany, or it was one of the European championships that went into triple overtime. And I was wondering, if it goes into triple overtime, what do these guys do to cool? And it was a warm, warm field, obviously. They're playing in Europe, and it was a very hot day, probably 2 weeks ago or something like that. And I was saying, what do they, and they're all out because it's a single elimination tournament, so they're playing all out, and you can't substitute very much in that game. I'm thinking of all the sports that are probably not geared for playing in the summer. It probably is the European Soccer League matches or even the World Cup matches, which will go on in Tokyo. And I was thinking, it's the Olympic matches that go on in Tokyo, not the World Cup. The World Cup, I guess, is next year. But I was thinking, without being allowed to make substitutions, without any timeouts for water breaks, these guys and ladies are running for 45 plus minutes straight. And it seems to me that's got to be a sport that's associated with cramping and heat-related problems. What do they do beforehand? And they're playing on artificial turf now.
No, you're absolutely right. Soccer's one of the sports we worry about. And the 2022 World Cup's going to be in Qatar, so it's going to be hot for sure. I think a lot of what this comes down to is, again, that training and acclimatization. So most of these teams will try to train in warmer temperatures and warmer environments when they can so that their bodies are used to that heat stress when they get to there. They're hydrating ahead of that match. They're drinking cool fluids as much as they can during the match, during those substitutions when they can. And then when they are on the sidelines, you'll see many of them take ice packs and put them around their neck. They'll use cooling towels around their necks. They'll have fans on the sideline to increase that wind speed, again, to decrease the amount of sweat that's staying on their skin, increase that evaporation. And you will see cramping. And cramping happens from dehydration. Cramping can happen from electrolyte imbalances. And you'll see at times that they'll be trying to stretch out those cramps. Occasionally, the physiotherapist will have to go onto the field and help them stretch out, because those cramps are really one of our first markers of heat illness. And you'll see that in these athletes. Some people are more prone to it than others, and most of them know if they're someone who tends to cramp, and they'll certainly be pushing fluid harder before the match and during halftime.
Now, does drinking, I assume for the real athletes in this, that drinking electrolyte solutions is something that is often done, whereas we usually just when we go to the beach, et cetera, even on the real hot days, just drink water. But is drinking an electrolyte solution a benefit And how about those electrolyte solutions with protein in them, et cetera?
So I think electrolyte solutions are very important for high-level athletes who are out there training in the heat. You're right. Most of us, when we go to the beach or when we're outside walking on a warm day, water's going to be fine for most of us. It's really all the electrolytes we need. But for these athletes who are out there for an hour or more, really sweating heavily, that sweat is taking away not just water, but also essential salts. And so those electrolyte solutions are probably very important for them to replace their salt losses. And most elite athletes over years of training have gotten to a place where they know which electrolyte solutions work better for them, which combinations of water and electrolyte solutions they need in order to keep their hydration balance proper for their level of training in their sport. The solutions that have protein in them are something that some athletes really enjoy. They think it helps for muscle rebuilding if they've been training hard. It's not something I typically recommend during a hard match or during the heat because it doesn't sit well on most people's stomachs. It just tends to make them feel a little bit queasy, and it does require a little bit of extra energy to digest those proteins. So during that strenuous exercise itself, my recommendation for most athletes is a mixture of water and electrolyte solution.
Now, how did you get into this field and so concerned with heat problems? Was there a problem in your family, or how did you happen to go towards athletic like this?
So my path is kind of an unusual one. I was a very modestly talented athlete growing up, but an athlete who was frequently injured. And so along the way, I made friends with several athletic trainers and physical therapists and physicians, a couple of orthopedists who did some great work on my knees when I was young. And I was never going to be a standout athlete before of sports. So I got into medical school thinking I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. But as you know, I'm sure you get into medical school, and I think the first branch point is, are you a surgeon or are you not a surgeon? And I was not a surgeon. And I was an athletic trainer before I went to medical school, and I was a paramedic before I went to medical school, and I sort of steered my way towards emergency medicine, but with a specific interest in those sideline emergencies, those things that come up during athletic events, during marathons, during races, that really require that immediate intervention to make a difference in an athlete's life. And so the things like cardiac arrest, which happen on the field, or heat illness. And so there's some great research that's been going on. The Carl Springer Institute out of UConn and the Center for Military Performance, CHAMP, with U.S. Army here in Bethesda, Maryland, really looking into how we can evaluate and how we can save lives for heat illness. In this country, heat is actually the number one weather-related killer. It's not tornadoes. It's not floods. It's not hurricanes. It's heat. Over 100 people a year in this country, more in big heat waves like we're having right now, die of heat illness. And so the recognition and the appropriate treatment of that type of heat illness really piqued my interest. And I want to make sure that as many people as we can prevent, rather than have to treat down the road.
And the other question is, when you see someone who is actually, what do you do when you see, if you're driving home or out and you see someone who's doing something that you know isn't healthy for them, say running at noon outside, training outside and running, do you feel compelled to say, hey, here's a bottle of water? Or how do you take it internally when someone's doing one of these things in this crazy weather we're having?
Well, it certainly makes me nervous. And I like to see when people are out, if they're going to train in that kind of hot weather, that they're training with a buddy, so somebody can be watching them when they're training. I have a significant interest in youth sports. And so for my own children's teams and for the youth sports teams in our area, I certainly try to work with the coaches and educate them on the importance of moving practice time, increasing water breaks. Withholding water should never be a punishment for poor performance in youth sports. In fact, when it's hot outside, the kids should be able to get a water break anytime they need one, anytime they're feeling tired. And I advocate having a parent spotter or an assistant coach who can really watch for that kid or young adult who looks like they're struggling, who looks like they're a step slower than they usually are, who's starting to look a little lethargic or gets that glassy-eyed look, so that we can intervene quickly with those young people from the heat get them to a cool place and cool them down rapidly before something serious occurs.
Geez, that's wonderful advice. I think the greatest advice I've heard today is train with a buddy, so that someone can keep an eye on you and make sure you stay hydrated, et cetera. So it's wonderful advice. We've been talking with Dr. Karen Hudson, who is a emergency room physician, but also a member of the MedStar sports medicine team that cares for a number of professional teams, as well as, you heard, youth athletes in the Washington, D.C. area. She practices at MedStar at Georgetown, and I can't thank you enough for teaching us and teaching all of us a couple of key points, which is don't hesitate to take water breaks, don't hesitate to use electrolyte solution, and always, if you're going to go out, I think the best advice I heard was always train with a buddy, and if you're a coach, get an assistant coach to keep spotting for you just for this problem to avoid it. Thanks very much, especially, and if someone's a little slower or a little draggy, get them off the field and get them cared for, and probably the best advice I think we can give everyone is learn to play hockey in the summer.
That's it. It's a great time to learn to skate. Have a place to get cool. Get into the air conditioning. Find a place to cool down. And don't train when it's too hot outside. Take a break.
Thanks very much. And thank you for downloading us and listening to us. This has been 1054A. As usual, we're brought to you by Persona Nutrition. You can find out what's missing in your diet or not by taking the free online assessment at personanutrition.com. Talk to a dietitian for free, and they'll help you find out how to get what you're missing from food or supplements, and they'll help you with those supplement choices, give you a pack that's a morning and an evening pack if you want it. Thanks again very much to Caitlin for engineering, and of course to our guest, Dr. Karen Hudson of Georgetown University and of the MedStar Health Emergency Medicine and Athletic Teams. We'll be back next week with 1054B, and the A, of course, is the latest medical news of the week and what it means to you. See you next week.